Good evening. My name is LaPortia, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Midwest Regional Teleconference Series call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Collins, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, LaPortia. Good evening, everyone. My name is Lisa Collins, and I'm from the Greater Illinois Chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. On behalf of the Society, I would like to welcome you to tonight's program titled Nutrition. This program is brought to you through a collaboration of the Greater Illinois, Gateway Area, Indiana, and Mid-America chapters. Together, we provide program services and research to improve the lives of people affected by MS. Recordings of this call will be available through each chapter for anyone wishing to refresh their notes or share with a friend. If you've not heard already, our Walk MS events are coming in April and May to your community. In fact, there is a wealth of opportunity made available by the Society through your local chapter for all levels of participation. We encourage you to reach out to your local chapter by calling 1-800-344-4867 or by visiting our websites for a list of upcoming events and programs. At this time, I would like to take a moment to thank our program sponsors, Bayer Healthcare and Biogen IDEC. Please note that during the first part of the program, as LaPortia noted, our speaker's presentation will be presented to you while you are in listen mode, so feel free to jot down your comments and questions as you listen. Following the presentation, the operator will open the lines for anyone to ask their questions. So we are fortunate tonight to have as our speaker, Marla Brodsky. Ms. Brodsky began her career in 1990 at Loyola University Medical Center, where she obtained a certification in nutrition support and worked with critically ill patients on the nutrition support team of the Critical Nutrition Unit. Working with the Department of Infectious Diseases at Loyola, she also became the nutrition director for the HIV/AIDS clinic. In 1994, while working at Loyola, Marla developed optic neuritis and was diagnosed with MS. This was when she began her interest in using nutrition and exercise to maintain muscle mass and reduce inflammation related to autoimmune, aging, and inflammatory disease. In 1997, Ms. Brodsky received the position of project coordinator for the Falk Trust grant-supported Geriatric Nutrition Research Project at St. Joseph Hospital in Chicago. Through this six-year grant, Ms. Brodsky developed and conducted several research studies on aging and ways to improve nutritional status and muscle strength of older adults. The results of this work was published and presented nationally at 9 different scientific meetings throughout the country. Ms. Brodsky is currently in private practice at her company, Luscious Life Nutrition, Inc. She has done training through Columbia University and Arizona Center on Integrative Medicine with the renowned Integrative Medicine physician Andrew Wild. She specializes in working with patients having chronic disease, inflammatory disorders, and autoimmune disorders through hands-on individual counseling, cooking classes, and strength training exercise. Marla has remained asymptomatic from her MS for 15 years and attributes much of that to diet and exercise. This passion fuels her to work with other MS patients in order to help them live more functional lives. I would now like to welcome Marla Brodsky.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that introduction. I'm really glad to be talking to all of you, and I hope that what I'm going to be talking about can help change some of your minds about how we eat and also how much control you have over your disease or our disease. And as Lisa mentioned, I've been a dietitian for 20 years, and 7 years into my practice, as my professional practice as being a dietitian, I developed optic neuritis and was diagnosed with MS. I like to talk about the fact that before my diagnosis, I had a cognitive knowledge of nutrition. I knew all the facts and figures about diet and could counsel people over a desk about what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. But it wasn't until I was diagnosed that I had a body knowledge of nutrition. I did research on diet and MS, and I started to experiment on myself. And I actually knew nutrition less in my head and more in my body. And as she mentioned, I have had virtually no exacerbations and since my diagnosis that long ago. Thank goodness. I know that everybody has a different experience, but I'm telling you this because I want you to know that you have more control over this disease than you might think you do. It just takes a conscious effort to make decisions about what we eat on each day and each moment that you make a decision about eating. So the goal of tonight's talk is to, what we're going to talk about is where we are today with diet based on some of the scientific data and also the anthropologic and evolutionary diet data and how all of that influences MS. So when we talk about the history of nutrition being used to treat MS, it was really started way back in the 40s by Dr. Roy Swank, who began research on diet as he traveled throughout the world and noticed that there was more MS prevalent in the northern climates than in the southern, and also more inland versus coastal areas. And this was similar to other autoimmune diseases. So he took 144 of his MS patients, and he followed them for really an unheard of 34-year period. It's a very long time for a research study, but he followed them for that long. In fact, there still are some of Swank's study patients living today. He put them on a low saturated fat diet, which was less than 20 grams per day. It was also high in omega-3 fats, and he followed those patients during the early stage of their disease. He categorized the patients based upon how compliant they were. So those patients who actually followed the diet, 95% of them remained asymptomatic, versus those he deemed noncompliant, 80% died of MS. So that was really the first look at how fat, in particular saturated fat, may influence multiple sclerosis. There have been further studies looking at kind of the epidemiologic impact of diet. French researchers extended those Swank studies and showed that as per capita of consumption of cow's milk among certain countries increased, there is a higher incidence of MS. This doesn't necessarily prove that dairy consumption causes MS, but there may be some sort of correlation. Similarly, that this occurs with type 1 diabetes, another autoimmune disease. Ashton Embry and Lauren Cordain from Canada also have been doing research on how diet affects MS. In fact, you can look at their website, directms.org, to look up some of the research and the people following their diet recommendations. And they're really looking at how a Paleolithic diet versus a modern type of diet affects MS. And we're going to be talking about that more. What I'm going to be talking about is kind of a combination of all of this, and it's based on the role of inflammation in disease. Now, when we talk about exacerbation of disease, pretty much every chronic disease, whether it's autoimmune, heart disease, diabetes, gastrointestinal, or obesity and cancer, all of them have a root. The root of exacerbation is based in inflammation. Now, inflammation isn't all bad. We need some of that. We need some inflammation in case you get a wound or a sore. You want your immune system to mount an attack and take care of it. The problem comes when that inflammatory process continues and just keeps going and going. The question is, why does this happen with MS and with some of these other chronic diseases? And one of the theories behind that is that our diet has evolved from how we used to eat as cavemen and women. We ate that way for thousands and thousands of years, and it's just been in this very last little millisecond of our existence that we have started to eat a more processed type of modern diet. We're eating, you know, grains that don't have any fiber, and we're eating artificial sweeteners and fats that are man-made and things that our immune system doesn't really recognize as being food. So the theory is that this change in our diet from how our genes really have been adapted has caused some of this chronic inflammatory condition to occur in our bodies. When we think about the fact that human DNA mutates at a rate of only 0.5% per million years, it makes some sense that that we may not have our genes may not be adapting very well to what we're eating. Back when we were cavemen, Paleolithic times, we ate mostly fruits, nuts, seeds, roots, leaves, things like that. We ate 800 varieties of plants, and now we're eating only about 20 different varieties of plants. They used to eat over 100 grams of fiber a day. I wouldn't recommend that anybody goes out and does that tomorrow because you might end up with some stomach problems, but right now the average intake of fiber is less than 15 grams per day. And also, they didn't have any dairy. Cows were not domesticated yet. Many years later, the first animals to be domesticated were sheep and then goat, which might be part of the reason why sheep and goat milk is better tolerated for the immune system than cow's milk is. They also didn't eat many grains. They ate half the fat that we did. It didn't have any processed food like Twinkies or Go-Gurt or things such as that. And, of course, no alcohol or tobacco. So the change between that type of diet and what we call now the standard American diet, which is the acronym is SAD, actually, is that, you know, right now we have a diet that is quite inflammatory, trans fats, omega-6 fats, and lots of sugars and pesticides and things that our immune system doesn't recognize. So the real magic, there really isn't a magic pill for improving this phenomenon. The real magic is by eating whole foods and foods that your great-great-grandmother probably would recognize to be food. Way back in 400 BC, Hippocrates said, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food." And I really still agree with that philosophy, that there is so many chemicals, phytochemicals, and special wonderful fibers and things that we probably haven't discovered yet that are in whole foods compared to pills or vitamins that, you know, you can just extract one chemical and put it into a pill, whereas one tomato, for example, has 10,000 different phytochemicals in it. So it does us better to research the latest vegetable than it does to research the latest supplement, actually. So the anti-inflammatory diet is really a diet of whole foods. There are some specifics with relation to MS, which I'm going to talk about. But basically, what we're looking at is trying to aim for a variety of whole foods and as much fresh food as possible, limiting the consumption of processed food. People with autoimmune disorders have a higher incidence of food sensitivities, and so that is one thing that we're going to talk about in terms of identifying what those are, because that can also influence the inflammatory process. So the first step to changing the diet is to do an oil change on yourself. Different fats either increase or decrease inflammatory hormones. I'm calling them hormones. They're really, there's something called prostaglandins. They're actually part of our immune system. But we'll call them hormones for now. Omega-6 fats, which you may have heard of, include most of the vegetable-type oils, corn oil, soybean oil, sunflower oil, safflower, and cottonseed oil. Those are called omega-6 fats. And when those are metabolized, they turn into inflammatory hormones. Now, remember, we need some of these because, you know, in case you get a cut, you want some inflammation to kill the bacteria that may have entered into that wound. However, in our current diet, we have way too many of these. On the other hand, the omega-3 types of fats, when those are metabolized, they turn into anti-inflammatory hormones. Now, you know, we want a balance of both of these things. Omega-3 fats come from fatty fish like salmon and mackerel, sardines, trout, and they also come from plant sources like flax seeds and hemp seeds and walnuts and pumpkin seeds. Back when we were cavemen, we had a one-to-one ratio between the omega-6 and the omega-3 fats. Now, it's a 30-to-1 ratio because we're eating more fried foods and more processed types of foods. Those are the omega-6 fats are the ones that they use to process those types of foods. So what we want to be doing is cutting down on omega-6 fats and finding every way possible to increase our omega-3 fat intake. So eat fish as often as you can, use flax seeds, eat walnuts as snacks, pumpkin seeds, those kinds of things to help increase your omega-3 intake. Now, in terms of cooking, you can't really cook with omega-3 fats. Another good fat that is anti-inflammatory is extra virgin olive oil. When we think about the fact that, you know, every cell membrane is made out of fat, the type of fat you eat actually affects every cell in your body. So when you look at some of the research on fat in terms of MS, as I said, they found that northern latitudes have a higher incidence of MS. But when they look within some of those northern latitudes, for example, in studies in the Netherlands, they find that those people who live in the coastal areas where there's a higher fish consumption have a lower rate of MS than those people who live more inland. So even though they're in the northern latitudes, there is a variation amongst that population in terms of those who actually eat more fish and more omega-3 fatty acids. Now, before I stop talking about fat, I need to talk about other fats known as saturated fat, which comes mainly from meats, and animal proteins and dairy products. There have been studies by Swank and others that show there is an acceleration of MS in people who consume a lot of saturated types of fat. So cutting down on a lot of red meat, for example, corn-fed red meat is a good approach. And another type of saturated fat called trans fatty acids or partially hydrogenated fat, this is a man-made fat, and our immune system sees it as a foreign invader. And this is, we need to cut this out completely from our diet. This increases inflammation very significantly. So if you go home and read your labels, make sure there's no partially hydrogenated fat in your foods. So start eating 2 to 3 cold water fish meals per week, salmon, mackerel, herring, sable bluefish, or sardines. If you don't like fish, you can always take fish oil supplements, which are especially high in EPA and DHA. Those are the components of fish oil that have anti-inflammatory properties, and also DHA works on the brain and the mood, so it's very important for depression or activity of the brain. Eat foods with plant omega-3s, and you also can take a GLA supplement, which is a type of omega-6 that gets converted into these anti-inflammatory hormones. Those include borage oil, black currant oil, and evening primrose oil. Fish oil, though, is the best in terms of lowering inflammation, even more than the plant omega-3s and these GLA types of supplements. So that's probably more than anybody wanted to know about fat. So we're going to move on and talk about the next category is antioxidants, which are really important to MS. The great paradox of life is that we need oxygen to live. However, it's poisonous to us. Oxygen causes unstable electrons to damage our neuronal tissues and increase plaque in our brain. These are called free radicals, and free radicals, it's really an electrical problem. Oxygen will steal an electron from one cell, make that cell unstable, and that cell steals an electron from another cell, and that cell becomes unstable. So this vicious cycle starts to damage our tissues, and all of those unstable cells or unstable electrons are called free radicals. Antioxidants stop that vicious cycle. So that's why they're called antioxidants, antioxygen. And we know when we measure patients with MS that antioxidant levels in our blood are lower than in the regular population. Where do we find antioxidants? Basically, plants with the most antioxidants are found in the most highly pigmented plants. This is the way that the plant protects itself from the radiation of the sun and from the environment by producing these pigments. So every different color in different plants helps a different body part, and the darkest ones are the best for you. But you need a variety of different colors every day. So, you know, for example, blue pigments help the brain and the nervous system, but green, yellow-green plants help with eye issues. They collect in the lens of the eye. Those are called astaxanthins. People with MS are found to have lower levels of antioxidants, and the flavonoids, those chemicals that are in plant foods, inhibit myelin destruction. So you should be trying to eat between 5 to 9 servings of different colored plant foods every day. Some especially important nutrients for MS in terms of plants are the anthocyanins, which we find in purple foods or blue foods, like purple potatoes or blueberries or berries. Those have been shown to help protect the blood-brain barrier from toxins or proteins that kind of leak into the bloodstream and attack myelin. So eat blueberries or those kinds of foods whenever you can. Vitamin C also is very important, and it's important in MS because it's concentrated in the brain and the central nervous system. Vitamin E helps to protect cell membranes and free radicals in cell membranes called peroxynitrates. And for those of us who like a glass of wine every once in a while, red wine contains a chemical called resveratrol. Unfortunately, the studies on resveratrol show that you really need to drink a lot of it in order to get some of the major benefits, something like 50 bottles at night. I would not recommend that to us. But if you're going to drink wine, drink red wine. And you may also want to try a resveratrol supplement. There's a lot of research now on resveratrol in terms of protecting the nervous system. Magnesium is also important, and if you have spasticity, magnesium helps to relax muscles. If you take magnesium, you want to also make sure that you're getting enough calcium. And the last thing that I want to emphasize, and we'll talk a little more about that, is vitamin D. There's been a ton of research recently on vitamin D, and it seems that vitamin D helps to inhibit the development of certain T cells in our immune system, which suppress some autoimmunity. There was a very large study using 95,000 nurses recently called the Nurses' Health Study, and that study showed that those people who had a vitamin D deficiency had a much higher risk of MS, and those people in the highest quartile of vitamin D levels in their blood actually had a 33% lower incidence of MS than those who had a lower level. So a normal level is between 30 and 50 nanograms of 25 hydroxy vitamin D. There are actually, many people are recommending even higher levels for people with MS. And the best source for vitamin D is to be in the sun. And I know we're all calling in from the Midwest. So that actually is not a great source for those of us who are living here in the Midwest, because we don't get to see the sun very often, especially now with our winter weather. So it's important for us probably to be taking a vitamin D supplement. You can also find it in wild mushrooms, some fatty fish, and fortified dairy, but I don't recommend that we overdo it on dairy foods. And it's very, very difficult to get enough fish to meet vitamin D levels. The recommended level of D intake that many people are recommending for people with MS is between 2,000 and 4,000 units a day. And you know, it's very safe. You can go up to 10,000 units a day with vitamin D without toxicity. So that's antioxidants and vitamins. The third issue that we want to think about is our digestive tract. Our digestive tract is probably the most highly immune organ in the body. And so if it is not healthy, the problem is that it can become inflamed and things can leak out through the gut. It's called leaky gut syndrome. The way that you can prevent that from happening and to strengthen your GI tract is by making sure that you're eating enough fiber, and that means whole grains, unprocessed flours, like, you know, not doing a lot of white flours and things that aren't in their original Paleolithic type of form. Quick rises in our blood sugar from eating those processed flours cause some inflammation in the GI tract and raise your blood sugar, which also causes inflammation. Many people recommend taking probiotics, which help to improve the gut bacteria, the healthy gut bacteria that's in our system. And that helps to strengthen your GI tract. The other thing that can help with the GI tract is to decrease foods that cause sensitivities in our system. People with autoimmune disorders, there is significant evidence showing that certain proteins in certain foods actually inflame the gut. They're almost like allergies, but they're not true allergies. They're food sensitivities. And when we become sensitive to those foods and the GI tract becomes inflamed, the proteins in those foods leak out of the GI tract, and those undigested proteins can mimic myelin basic protein. So our immune system can't differentiate those proteins from real myelin. So the theory is that that is why we get some attack on our myelin, because we have these food sensitivities. The main foods that cause sensitivity are gluten, which is found in wheat, barley, and rye, dairy, which contains the protein casein from cow's milk, legumes, beans, yeast, and eggs. And if you feel you might have a sensitivity to these, you can get tested for IgG through an ELISA test, or find a dietitian and do an elimination diet with her and see if you are sensitive. And this is really what I did for myself, and I they found that I am sensitive. When I stopped eating dairy and gluten, the little bit of numbness that I had in the bottoms of my feet went away completely. The fourth thing that we need to think about are all of those things in our environment, the pesticides and the artificial chemicals that we often don't really think twice about, like perfumes and things that are we put in our hair and on our skin and cosmetics. All of those artificial chemicals enter into our system, and this is something that our immune system has to combat as well. So whenever possible, try to look for organic food and cosmetics. I know it's a little more expensive, but it is, in my opinion, definitely worth it to spend a little extra money and feel safe about what you're putting into your body. And then the fifth item to think about is spicing up your diet. Spices actually have more antioxidants than even the highest fruit and vegetable antioxidant capacity. So there are certain chemicals that are in spices called COX-2 inhibitors. Some of you may be familiar with that term because there are drugs that are modeled after COX-2 inhibitors like Celebrex that help relieve pain. But food has them in it, too. Onions and apples contain quercetin, a chemical which decreases inflammation. And two really potent ones are turmeric, which is in the yellow spice in curry, and ginger. Those two are very powerful. So eat your Indian food whenever you can. Rosemary, red pepper, the spicy pepper, artichoke, and boswellia, which is a type of herb. There's been a lot of research on turmeric. The chemical in turmeric is called curcumin, and studies in mice suggest that it blocks the progression of some MS. And when we look at epidemiologic data, there's a very low level of neurologic disease in elderly Indian people, probably because they eat so much curry. We're not quite sure what the mechanism is behind why turmeric helps to prevent some of these neurologic diseases, but they're looking at using curcumin or turmeric to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and MS. It's very, very potent in terms of helping that. And the last thing I want to talk to you about, and we kind of touched on this before, is to eat less animal protein, mainly because of the saturated fatty acids. Animal protein, animal fats without fish fats correlate in studies positively with MS mortality. And studies by somebody named Gadirian in 98 showed an increased risk of MS associated with a high calorie and a high animal food intake. So, you know, cut down on red meat unless you are eating the type of red meat that has higher omega-3 fats, and those are grass-fed animals and wild cuts of meat. So grass-fed beef is better because it has omega-3 fats, and things like lamb and venison, which are wild, actually have very little saturated fat and a lot of omega-3 fats because of the grass. Also, vegetable proteins are very also very healthy for us. So in conclusion, the main components of the anti-inflammatory diet are to eat lots of plant foods of many different colors, 5 to 9 servings a day. Use extra virgin olive oil as your main cooking fat. Incorporate fatty fish 3 or more times per week, or take fish oil supplements. The one I recommend is Nordic Naturals Ultimate Omega. It's got a lot of EPA, DHA in it, about 2 to 3 grams per day. You want to use low glycemic carbs, whole grains, the gluten-free grains like millet and quinoa and rice and corn. Those are fine for us. A little less animal protein. If you do eat animal protein, choose the grass-fed types. And spice up your diet with lots of turmeric and ginger and other spices. Those are very powerful antioxidants. They should not be an afterthought. You should use them liberally. And importantly, we should all be tested for food sensitivities, whether you go on an elimination diet or you actually get an ELISA test and test your blood. But gluten and dairy and some of these other food sensitivities may play a huge role in lowering the inflammatory process. Finally, get your vitamin D level checked, and I do recommend that people with MS take supplemental vitamin D. There's a lot of research on it, and it does seem to really help MS progression. So with that, I'm going to just give you one example of how to put that into practice, and then we can open up the lines for your questions. So if I were to look at a typical breakfast, for example, of somebody, typical breakfast might be a ham and cheese omelet, hash brown potatoes, sausage, orange juice, and coffee with cream and sugar. How can you change that into an anti-inflammatory breakfast? Well, something that I do when I'm making an omelet is I add lots of vegetables. So you could add spinach, maybe some garlic, some shiitake mushrooms for the vitamin D content, onion for the quercetin, some tomato and rosemary, which is also a COX-2 inhibitor. So that, to me, is a really great omelet. Instead of hash brown potatoes, you can make sweet potato hash using onions and fresh herbs. Instead of orange juice, which has a lot of sugar in it, you could have a bowl of mixed berries with anthocyanins to help protect the blood-brain barrier. And instead of coffee with cream and sugar, some nice green tea, which has lots of antioxidants in it, would be a great, wonderful substitute. So with that, I'd like to open it up and take some of your questions. Thank you so much for listening. I'm happy also, if I don't get your question answered, on the handout that is on the MS website, my email is listed there and my phone number. So feel free to email me with your questions. So I'd like to open it up.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. Again, that is star 1 for questions. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question is from the line of Kathy with the Midwest Chapter.
Hi. First off, thank you very much. This is the best call I've ever listened to. I really have two questions. One is about fresh juicing. I'm just thinking about getting a juicer. And my other question is regarding supplements. Before I was diagnosed, I was really into supplementation and soy products, and I built up my immune system, and then I get diagnosed. And I was always thinking and have been told that MS, you don't want to beef up your immune system too much because it'll just fight you. So I was surprised to hear about the vitamins that we should take, and I wonder about zinc and also herbs.
Right, that's a great question. So for the first question regarding juicing, I definitely think that juicing is good because you're getting lots of vitamins. The problem with juicing is that most juicers take all the fiber out of it. And when you take away a lot of the fiber from the juice, that sugar is absorbed very quickly into your bloodstream, which can be inflammatory for most people. So unless you have a juicer like the one I have is a Vitamix juice. It's not a juicer. It's really a blender that turns things quickly into a liquid form, but all the fiber is still left there. Unless you're doing something like that, I usually don't recommend juicing. I recommend trying to eat the vegetables as much as possible just because of the blood sugar reaction. And in terms of supplements, I don't necessarily recommend taking a lot of supplements. There are a few that I recommend, like fish oil, vitamin D, Maybe resveratrol, because there has been some recent studies on that. But I agree with not overdoing it on supplementation. Food is really the best way to go. I always say, if we spend as much time researching how to make vegetables taste good as we do researching the latest supplement, we'd be way better off.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks.
Sure.
Your next question is from the line of Cindy with the Mid-America chapter.
Hey, Cindy.
Hi. I have two questions as well. First off, thank you. This has been very, very helpful. I appreciate your time and everything. You had mentioned how important magnesium was. Now, where can we get magnesium if not through a supplement?
Magnesium is found in green plants. So leafy greens have magnesium. It's actually the central molecule in chlorophyll. So you will get it in leafy greens. You'll also get it in beans, and grains have magnesium. So really, many foods have magnesium in them. You don't have to take a supplement, unless, you know, if you're really having a problem with spasticity,
mm-hmm.
You may want to try a magnesium supplement, 400 milligrams per day, see if it can help with relaxing muscles and reducing tremor.
Oh,
some
great.
Some people recommend up to 800, but I would start with a lower dose, because one of the side effects of magnesium is diarrhea. So start low and move up.
Okay. All right. Good. Then the other question I had, and I missed it as you were talking about it, the Q2s.
The what?
Oh, the Q2s the good stuff. Oh, darn. Shoot. I don't know what.
Oh.
The antioxidants, the...
quercetin?
No, it's in something. Well, I'll just have to figure this out and ask the question again somewhere. Again, I mean later.
Sure.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay.
Your next question is from the line of Irv with Indiana State Chapter.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you very much for all this information.
Sure.
I'm calling to ask if you recommend a particular reference that we can use. I'm not that fast at writing, and I'd like to find some reference to read to learn more about what you've described.
Well, I did. Did you get the handout from the MS Society?
No, I did not.
So I have a 3-page handout that actually incorporates pretty much everything I just talked about that I believe you can access from the MS Society website.
Okay, I will do that.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Your next question is from the line of Pamela with the Mid-America chapter.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Neither did I get the handout. It was not attached to my confirmation email, so I will have to look that up. But I've been taking notes, trying quickly.
Oh, good.
Two questions. Caffeine? You were recommending changing to green tea. I love to have my one cup of coffee in the morning. I need caffeine. So.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying that you can't have coffee. And coffee actually is a plant food, so it also has antioxidants in it.
Even though it's so refined.
Yes. It's just, you know, it's those people who drink a pot of coffee a day. Caffeine can have some negative effects on the nervous system.
Yeah.
You don't want to turn into somebody who's, you know, hypervigilant in terms of their nerves.
The other part of my question, I got disconnected somehow during part of it, and I'm not sure if you already where you said this. You were talking about the calcium and magnesium. The calcium, my endocrinologist has been working, testing different vitamins. The D we've increased, but the calcium, he told me to decrease in half. But again, everything I've ever seen is you take calcium and magnesium together. I'm one of those ladies who, you know, takes it as the supplement because I'm in that change life period. So how do you know you're getting too much or calcium because of your food versus supplement? Or do you need more of it? Did I misunderstand?
Well, you need about 1,200 milligrams, 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure why he told you to cut down on your calcium. Some people...
It was too high is all I know.
Your blood level was too high?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you know, if your blood level is high, that's usually from a different reason.
Okay.
It's from usually a parathyroid alteration.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's different than...
Yeah, you gave the same numbers he gave me, so, okay.
Yeah.
That was it. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question is from the line of Lana with the Indianapolis chapter.
Hi, Lana.
Hi. Again, I want to also say thank you very much for this information. I'm newly diagnosed. This is the first call that I've actually been in on, and I really did enjoy being able to do that. My question is, you didn't cover any of this, and I'm just wondering if there's any information that you have found on aspartame, the different things that are used as sweeteners that are supposedly linked to Alzheimer's, MS, and other autoimmune type of illnesses?
Yes, thank you for that question. I didn't have time to talk about that, but aspartame is very dangerous for the nervous system. They call it an excitotoxin for the brain and the nervous system. And we need to really, almost every sugar substitute has problems with them. So I would definitely recommend that people eliminate aspartame from their life unless you have ants that you want to get rid of because it kills ants too. It affects their nervous system as well. So, you know, it's only good to kill ants, but don't put it in your body. And the other ones, I generally don't think artificial sweeteners that are made out of chemicals are very good for us. The one that might be not as bad is stevia, which is made from cactus, like tequila. But that's the only one that I would recommend. Agave is also a better type of sweetener. It's more natural.
Okay, because I am using the stevia now also.
Yeah, that would be safer.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Your next question is from the line of Joanne with the Midwest chapter.
Hello.
Hi.
Marla?
Yes.
Thank you again. This amazing information here. I was doing some study and sort of related thing, but like Michelle Obama is, you know, working on childhood obesity, and there's a couple other works like the China study, Mark Hyman's The Ultra Metabolism, Jen Workman is in Ayurveda, which is a type of supplements and turmeric and ginger and natural things. And it seems that what you're saying here, not only for the MS, but it would sort of correct a lot of situations like in obesity and in a lot of different types of things.
Right.
It seems that all the things I've been reading the last 20 years, because I crashed my life back in the 70s, and so I got into vegetarian and organic gardening and growing things and sort of staying to that type of diet, and it's just so it just
wonderful.
Changes your it does change your whole physical and spiritual and your mental things, but it's a lot of withdrawal symptoms when you're first changing, but
I also am a vegetarian. And I agree with you. Like I said in the very beginning, almost every chronic disease, including obesity, and actually aging in general, may be related to this inflammatory process. And all of these things are based on lowering sugar and eating less processed foods and eating organic types of plants and things. So yes, it's interesting that people have been working in so many different areas on diet, and we're really coming all down to one basic diet.
Yeah, that's a pattern.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
Your next question is from the line of Kelly with the Gateway Chapter.
Hi. I'm wondering about, here in the Midwest, we have problems with getting really fresh fruits and stuff. So I was wondering about the nutritional value from frozen fruits. Are they pretty much the same as a fresh fruit would be?
That's a really good question. Yes, they are. In fact, frozen is often better than fresh because they pick it and they flash freeze it right after it's picked, whereas oftentimes fruits and vegetables in the grocery store have traveled all across the world and have been stored for long periods of time. So those vitamins and minerals volatilize off into the air. And so they have lower levels of nutrients in them than frozen.
Okay. The woman who couldn't remember earlier,
yes.
She was talking about the COX-2. You had mentioned something about the COX-2 inhibitors.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question is from the line of Linda with the Gateway Chapter.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. I was wondering how you spelled resveratrol. I wasn't familiar with that. You were talking about that as a supplement?
Yes. R-E-S.
Okay.
R-E-S-V-E-R.
Okay.
A-T-R-O-L.
A-T-R-O-L?
Yep.
Okay, great. And the ELISA test. Pardon?
Let me make sure I... called R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, resveratrol.
Okay. And the ELISA test that you recommended for food sensitivity, you would just ask your doctor for the ELISA test and she would know or he would know?
Well,
are there different ones for different?
Well, yes, you need to ask to have a test that measures both IgE and IgG sensitivity. So you might want to go to an allergist. IgE measures true allergy, like if you eat something, your lips swell up. That's an allergy. Food sensitivity is an IgG reaction. It's a different part of your immune system, and that is called a delayed hypersensitivity reaction. You may not get an immediate reaction like that. You may not get an immediate swelling, but you will feel it a day or a couple days later.
Okay.
So yes, ask for IgG
okay.
test.
The IgG would be for the delayed reaction that you would see more often in this leaking gut syndrome, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And would that leaking gut syndrome also produce loose bowels and things like that, loose stools?
That's not really what they're talking about there.
So you wouldn't notice it.
You notice it sometimes by more tingling, more numbness, brain fog. Some people describe just kind of having a foggy cognitive abilities. Those types of mild symptoms that you just kind of...
No, that's MS, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's more of the delayed hypersensitivity types of symptoms.
Okay. Thank you very much for all the information.
You're welcome.
Your next question is from the line of Jill with the chapter of Indiana.
Hi, Jill. Hello?
Jill, your line is open.
Hello?
No response from Jill. Your next question is from the line of Mary with the Missouri chapter.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
And thank you for your excellent, excellent program.
Okay.
I have a few questions. Right now I'm taking a supplement called Juice Plus.
Uh-huh.
And I wondered if you had any feelings one way or t'other on that.
My only feeling is that I don't believe that there's any way that you can get all of the same nutrients that you get from eating fruits and vegetables in a pill. It just, there's just so much synergistic chemicals that are found in fruits and vegetables that there would be no way to extract them and to put them into a pill. So, I don't know what all the research is on Juice Plus. I don't think it's harmful for you, but if you're doing it as a replacement for changing your diet to be plant-based or eating more real plant foods, I wouldn't rely on it.
Okay.
So,
another question was, what kind of olive oil? They have extra virgin, beginning virgin, slightly virgin. You know, they have all those different kinds, and you can use that in place of any of the other oils in your cooking?
Well, yes, extra virgin is the best. The reason why it's good is because they don't use any chemicals like hexane, which they use in other oils to extract the oil from the olive. They just press the olive.
Mm-hmm.
So the green pigments that you see in olive oil, actually, those are plants that have anti-inflammatory properties to them.
Okay.
You can cook with olive oil up to 450 degrees. They do that in Italy. They use olive oil for pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can, it has a little stronger flavor to it. If you don't want that flavor, then get the regular olive oil that's not extra virgin and won't have that flavor.
And I know I had looked at the Swank diet at one time, and they were like, no dairy, no cheese, no ice cream. And I'm thinking, oh, my. And that kind of wigged me out, and I thought, well, and no meat. So I probably had skimmed through it because I don't eat much meat now.
Uh-huh.
You know, but is it even cheese and ice cream and... All of those things are out too? Do you eat none of those?
Well, I did go on a diet which was no meat.
Uh-huh.
I was vegetarian before my diagnosis, but no meat, no wheat, no sweet, no no peat, no dairy.
Uh-huh.
I did not have any cow's milk products. But for many people, you can tolerate goat, like goat cheese or sheep's milk cheese, and that's what I. If I want cheese, I eat that kind of cheese. So I had been on a completely gluten-free, dairy-free diet for over a year, and my symptoms went away. So you know, once your immune system kind of slows down for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Many times you can tolerate a little bit of gluten and dairy back, but you need to be off of it for a little bit. So now I do eat some gluten, and I don't get any symptoms back.
Okay.
But yes, it does include all of that. There is other ice creams, like rice milk ice cream, and there's soy ice creams and coconut milk ice creams that you can eat.
Okay. Because that would probably be my hurdle, my biggest hurdle, unless you said no chocolate, and then I would have to.
No, chocolate is the new health food.
I'm all over it. You know, this was, do you recommend it, like any cookbooks? I'm not vegetarian. I'd just as soon, like I'll fix lentils and rice and for dinner, you know. I usually throw some cheese in it too, but, you know, and put some veggies or something in it. But,
I have a lot of cookbooks. My favorite one, which you'd have to kind of pick and choose amongst it, is called Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone by Deborah Madison. It's a big book, and it's got lots of wonderful recipes in it. But Andrew Weil actually has a cookbook with Rosie Daly, who used to cook for Oprah. And so he's got a lot of really good recipes, and they're healthy as well, good healthy recipes.
Okay, so the Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone is by who?
By Deborah Madison. She's got lots of books,
okay.
And they're all wonderful.
Yeah, I had the ones from, like, the Enchanted Broccoli Forest and all those from up north. And then Weil, is that W-I-L-E or?
W-E-I-L.
Okay.
He's a doctor.
Okay.
Who teaches nutrition.
Okay. Well, this has been an excellent, excellent program, and I thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, and I'm glad to hear that there's a handout on the web.
Yes.
Okay.
Your next question is from the line of Annette.
Hi. Hello. First of all, I want to say thank you. You did a great job tonight, too. But I did want to ask the aspartame that you were talking about for diet drinks. If we're not supposed to drink them, what would you recommend if we need caffeine? If we don't drink coffee. What else?
I would recommend drinking tea. Regular black or green tea that contains caffeine if you need it.
Green tea does?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. All right, well, thank you then.
So does black tea, yes. All tea has caffeine.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question is from the line of Pamela with the Mid-America chapter.
Hi, one more question back with these artificial sweeteners. You were talking about stevia, but there's a new one out that my neurologist says no Splenda even because the chemical stuff in it.
Right.
But being a diabetic, I got to find something, and unfortunately I have a sweet tooth. Everything I have tried seems really, really sweet, like sickening sweet.
except mm-hmm. the Trevia. Do you know anything about it?
It's stevia. You know, it also is very sweet. One that you might want to try is agave.
Agave. Spell it, please.
A-G-A-V-E.
Thank you.
It's low glycemic, and it's not as sweet.
Okay, thanks. Because I'd rather eat sweets than drink them. And the chocolate can't leave my sight. Okay, one last question. How does all of this put together with, I haven't heard you say anything about medication, and I take quite a bit, and I'm on Copaxone shots. So am I going to cause myself some problems or changes that I should be aware of with my shots and putting these changes into my place?
Absolutely not. This is, this diet is meant to be integrative into, whatever treatment that you're on. It is just a healthy diet, which actually should help improve how medication works.
Oh.
And hopefully, depending upon what the medication is for, sometimes people can get off certain medications, like for blood pressure and for, if you have high blood sugars or other things if you change your diet. So, but this doesn't interact with any MS drug for sure.
Great. And by the way, thank you so much. This has really been educational. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is Lisa from the Greater Illinois Chapter. I just wanted to extend a warm thank you to you, Marla, as well. And a thank you to everyone who's on the call still listening. And let our program facilitator entertain just two more questions coming across the line in the interest of time.
Your next question is from the line of Kanisha with the Mid-America Chapter.
Hello. I have to say thank you for answering the question I've been asking for the past 9 years. I was diagnosed on my 19th birthday, and my question then became, so what can I do to try to control this madness? But I wanted to ask you specifically, how about shellfish? I'm from Baltimore, and when I go home, I'm going to kill a crab.
shellfish are fine. They don't necessarily have a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. But they are, they're fine for you. They're probably better than eating beef and other proteins that are higher in saturated fat. So go ahead and kill your crab.
Well, I just had to ask because living in mid-Missouri, middle of the nation somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm stuck on shrimp because it's the only thing I can get to, or snow crab, and that's a lesser crab than what I'm used to.
Right, yeah. No, definitely enjoy that.
Thank you.
And your final question will come from the line of Valerie with the Chicago, Illinois Chapter.
Yes, thank you, Marla, for all this great information. And I had one question. I was writing down the list of things that you said that you would be sensitive for your immune system, and it was gluten, dairy. Did you say beans?
Some people are sensitive to beans, legumes, yes. Some
legumes?
People are, yes, not green beans.
Not green beans or they always say lima beans and black beans are good for you.
Yes, they are. Some people find that they are sensitive to beans. There's a chemical collectins that are in beans that some people are sensitive to. I'm not sensitive to it. I eat lots of beans, because I don't eat meat myself. So I eat, for protein, lots of
protein.
Lentils and black beans and those kinds of things. But, everybody's different. Their sensitivities are different. And, you you might want to put yourself on an elimination diet and or find a dietitian to help you with that. And so you would eliminate all of those things and then you add them back one at a time and see how you feel. Do you notice any new symptoms?
Well, right. Yeah, I know I stay away from gluten, dairy, and aspartame. I even read everything and, oh, boy, that's a bad word, you know.
Yeah.
And you say eggs are bad, too.
You know, just some people might be sensitive to them, but not everybody. So, you know, you really need to test it out.
Okay, well, I thank you ever so much.
You're welcome.
Very helpful here.
Oh, good.
There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you. This is Lisa again from the Greater Illinois Chapter. I just want to extend much appreciation to our speaker this evening and to everyone who's on the call. I know there were a lot of questions, and perhaps if you did not get to ask your question this evening, please look for the information posted on each of our chapters participating in the program website. There should be an attachment there, and if not, you can reach out to our 1-800 number. It's 1-800-344-4867, and let us know that you're looking for the information that Marla had distributed as a part of the call today. And I want to thank everybody and ask the members of the Greater Illinois and the Indiana chapter to remain on the line for three short survey questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. The polling session is about to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the polling session of the conference call. To answer each question, you'll need to press the corresponding number on your telephone keypad. Question number one. I learned something new that I will use in my everyday life. Please press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Question number 2. The content was presented clearly in an unbiased way. Please press 1 for yes or 2 for no. And question number 3. The speaker was knowledgeable about the topic. Please press 1 for yes or 2 for no. And this concludes the Midwest Region Teleconference Series. You may now disconnect.